Good morning. Welcome to Ellettsville Christian Church. It's so good to see so many smiling faces. I actually had to add some chairs as we sing in that first song, so it's just awesome to see people here and having fun enjoying worshiping together. If you did not grab a candle, this is your last chance to grab a candle. Actually, at the back doors, there's a couple of tubs from those that discarded their candles after first service. So if you don't have a candle, now's your last chance, because it will make sense at the end of service why we need candles. And some of you are going to figure this out very quickly when I say that for the past several weeks, we have been studying being the light of the world. So some of you have clued in that, hey, we're going to light some candles and we're going to be the light of the world. But like I said, for the past few weeks, we've been going through, Byron has been taking us through a series where we've been discussing kind of what we call the seven deadly sins and then a Christian response to those, what we as Christians should be doing as a response to those so that we can be the light of the world. And he came to me several weeks ago and he says, hey, Matt, we're going to do graduation. You know, this is when we're going to do graduation Sunday. I think it would be a good idea for you to preach on graduation Sunday. And here's what you're going to preach on. And he told me I get to preach on slothfulness. I was like, are you trying to say something here, Byron? Actually, no, Byron came and said, hey, you're going to preach. This is kind of where we are. Which one of these would you like? And I kind of looked at this this sermon that he kind of put up as sloth versus service, and I thought, that's perfect. That's the one I want. So I did intentionally choose this one. Now, when we think of sloth and slothfulness, I oftentimes think of Zootopia. And in Zootopia, the animals go into the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, which is run by nothing more than sloths. And I don't know if you've been to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. I had to go a couple months ago to get a title for my truck, and I went in there, and I swear there were 30 people sitting in the waiting area and like 10 people working, and I kept seeing like 20 people going back and forth through doors, and I'm like, can you make this go any faster? So, you know, sometimes it feels like it lives up to that. But when we think of sloth, it can be defined as laziness. And when we define sloth as laziness, I don't know if you're like me, but my brain goes straight to Proverbs chapter 6. And this is what Solomon says. He says, take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Learn from their ways and become wise. Though they have no prince or governor or ruler to make them work, they labor hard all summer gathering food for the winter. But you lazy bones, how long will you sleep? When will you wake up? A little extra sleep, a little more slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Then poverty will pounce on you like a bandit. Scarcity will attack you like an armed robber. I can remember my graduation Sunday. I can remember it very vividly. I was downstairs working with the children in children's ministry, because it's much more fun to be downstairs with the kids than have to sit up in big people church. So I was downstairs serving in children's ministry, and my dad was preaching, and he had brought all of the other graduates up. I was late getting up there because they forgot, and they had to send somebody to get me to bring me up. So all of the other graduates had already stood up there. They had already given their answers. You know, he's like, where do you plan on going to college? What do you plan on doing? He asked them very lovely, nice questions, had an honest, wonderful conversation with them. And then I come up late, and he brings me up front, and he's just got this huge smile on his face because he was so full of pride, because he knew I was going to Lincoln Christian College, and then I was going to study youth ministry, and then I was going to follow him into the ministry. So with pride in his voice and on his face, he looks at me and says, Matt, what are you going to do after graduation? Now note, when he talks to everyone else, he says, what college are you going to go to? What are you going to study? What are the things that you're going to do? When he comes to me, Matt, what are you going to do after graduation? Without skipping a beat, without even really thinking about it, I said, I'm going to sleep till noon. And I could just see the smile vanish from my father's face, as he never knows what to do with my sarcasm, even though I learned it from him. You see, I had this idea once high school was over, you know, I didn't have to go to work Monday morning. I didn't have to go anywhere. I didn't have to get up and be any place. I was going to sleep until noon. And guess what I did Monday morning? I slept until noon. I was really, really lazy. And it really showed itself when I got into college and made some really stupid decisions and had to retake classes. And let me tell you, that's expensive to pay someone to fail a class. And then to have to pay to take it again. It's really not a great idea. My laziness came across in what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do things. And my laziness has really hurt me a lot throughout life. But when we look at laziness and we look at how does laziness manifest itself in the world, it manifests in itself in the world when we refuse to work. When we refuse to do things. We refuse to get up and be a part of what's going on. Now, I'm going to share some statistics with you, and I'm not trying to be overly political in these statements, so bear with me as we have this conversation, but the current unemployment rate in America today is 6.1%. That means of the employable aged people in America, 6.1% of them are on unemployment, are not working. That roughly translates to about 12 million people. There are 12 million people in America today who are not, who could be working and are not working. Now, I'm not trying to say that everyone that's on unemployment is this way, but there are some people. Because I was out yesterday with my wife, we were driving around, and I swear every business I drove past had a sign on it that says, "Now hiring." We went to Sam's Club, and I love going to Sam's Club because at Sam's Club, I don't know if you've learned this, but Sam's Club in the deli, they serve this piece of pizza that I swear is like this big, and you can get a piece of pizza and a Coke for like $2.50. That's like an entire meal for $2.50. And so we went to Sam's Club. We went to Rural King first because they've got the popcorn back at Rural King. I've been there in the past week. I've been there twice just to get the popcorn. I get the popcorn and then walk around and act like I'm shopping and then come back out. But I went to Sam's Club and I was like, yes, I'm going to get myself a slice of pizza because I'm hungry and I'm going to get a piece of pizza. And I walk up and it was closed. Not Sam's Club, but the cafe was closed. And a big sign on it says closed due to understaffing. In America today, we have 8.1 million unfilled jobs. There are 12 million people who need a job and we have 8.1 million jobs that need people. In America today, we have created a society where it's easier not to work than it is to work. And that's a shame. Now, I understand that there are some people that do need to be on unemployment. I understand that things happen and certain situations operate in a particular way. I can also do math and see that there are 12 million people that need a job and 8 million jobs, that there still leaves 4 million people that would be without a job. I understand how that works, but what I'm saying is there are a lot of people that aren't working that should be working. We have created a society where it's easier not to work than it is to work. Now, how does laziness manifest itself in the church? Laziness manifests itself in the church when we become consumers that never produce. When we come to church and we get, and we never give. We always take, but we never give. Now, I also understand, I did this first service and I started to do it again. I'm not even paying attention to my own outline here. There's an adage in the church, and I don't know how truthful it is, but I know that I have experienced kind of this. And the adage in the church is that about 20% of the people do 80% of the work. I've never looked at the studies to find out if that's actually true or not, but I noticed that when we ask for things to be done here, that it's like the same 10 people every time that volunteer to do certain things. Now, it is not my intention to stand here and step on people's toes this morning. That's not what I'm trying to do. But I know my own tendency towards laziness. And I know that it manifests itself in a lot of us that we come to church and we take, but we never give. Now, I also understand that we are all here in different seasons of life. That some people here today need to be filled. That you've got some kind of life situation going on and you need to come here and you need for those that love Jesus to pour into you. And I am so thankful that you are here. However, I know that there are some of us here who have been poured into for years, and it's time for us to start filling other people. It's time for us to take what's been done to us and to take that out and share that with those around us. Because the way that you combat laziness in the church is through service. The way that you combat being a consumer all the time and never producing is to find some way to serve and find something to do. This is what Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 4. He says, God has given each of you a gift from his great variety of spiritual gifts. Use them well to serve one another. Do you have the gift of speaking? Then speak as though God himself were speaking through you. Do you have the gift of helping others? Do it with all the strength and energy that God supplies. Then everything you do will bring glory to God through Jesus Christ. All glory and power to him forever and ever. Amen. We need to know our gifts and use them. If you were in here, if you're watching online, if you were in here and you call Christ your Savior and Lord, you have been baptized into Jesus. When the Holy Spirit comes into our lives, he doesn't just come in. He also comes in bearing gifts. And it's not like he brings a housewarming gift and it says, hey, I'm going to make you look a little bit better when you're doing this. What he brings is a gift that we can specifically use for his kingdom. He brings us a talent or ability that we can use in God's kingdom. Now, if you're sitting out there and you're wondering, I want to know what my gifts are, I'm going to give you two pieces of advice, two things you can do to find out what your gifts are. The first one is find someone that you know, love, and trust and ask them, hey, what do you think my areas of giftedness are? What do you think I'm good at? How do you think that God has gifted me for his kingdom? And listen to what they have to say, because they know you and they can see what God has done for you. I know that my mom has sometimes asked, you know, what do you think that my gifts are? My mom definitely has the gift of hospitality. We would wake up on Sunday morning and get ready for church, and I would walk up in the living room and I'd say, Mom, after church, who is coming over to our house after church today? And she would say, no one is coming over. You don't have to worry about it. We don't have any plans. By the end of church, we would have four families coming over to our house after church. I said, Mom, I asked you, who's coming over? You said, nobody. Now we have four families coming over to church. And she said, well, none of us had plans, so we all decided to not have plans together, and so we're all just bringing our food together, and we're having fun together. It did end up being an enjoyable time because my mom has the gift of hospitality. If people know her, they will tell her, yeah, you obviously have the gift of hospitality. The second thing I'm going to tell you to do is something we call a spiritual gifts assessment. You can Google spiritual gifts assessment. They will pull a ton of them up. Pick one depending on how long you want to spend on. I took one on Thursday just for the fun of it. It took me 10 minutes to do it. Sent me an email, says, here's your areas of giftfulness and this is how you can use it. If you want something a little bit more in depth, this will take you about an hour to do. I have given this to several of the kids in youth group to do from time to time. You go through and answer some questions and you score it and it says, hey, this is your area of giftfulness and this is how you can use it in the church. This is what it means. It's really beneficial. If you want one and you don't want to do the Google fast version, you want to like sit down and take some time, I've got some of these. But this is a student edition, so you know it's meant for kids, but it's this. My gifts have been the same since high school. And it's interesting. When I go up to people and I say, hey, you know me, love me, and I trust you, what are my areas of giftfulness? And then I take a spiritual gifts assessment. Almost every single time, they're exactly the same. Because people know what your gifts are, and you can see what your gifts are. Now, the next part of that is you have to actually use your gifts. God has given them to you for you to use. It is your job to go out and use those gifts for his kingdom, to go out and do things, to be the hands and feet of Jesus to the people around you. This is what Jesus has to say about this in Matthew 20. When the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. See, James and John had come up to Jesus and they said, hey, when you set up your kingdom, we want one of us to be on your right and one of us to be on your left. We're going to be like the second and third most powerful people in the kingdom. And the other disciples were a little upset about this. But Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must become your slave. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now think about it. If Jesus would have come to his disciples and said, listen, I'm God, and you are going to serve me. I am God, and it is your job to take care of me. Would any of us have a problem with that? Would any of us have a problem with God coming down and saying, it is your job to serve me? No, we're not going to have a problem with that. He's God. Like, he created us. It is our job to serve him. But what does Jesus say? He doesn't say, I came to be served, but I came to serve you. To be a leader, you must serve others. I used to be a teacher, and I taught for about 7 years in Indianapolis public schools, and I had two different kinds of principals during my time there. I had one principal, I'm not going to say his name, But he believed that he was the most important person in the entire building. He believed that we were all there to bring him glory, and he acted like it. He was not a very nice person to work with. But I learned how to deal with him. I learned the proper ways to bring something up, the proper ways to talk to him. I learned how to play the game, basically. When he got fired, I wasn't overly upset by it. Then a new principal came in. His name was Chad Gray. I loved Chad. Chad was an awesome guy because Chad believed that the most important people in the school were the students. And the second most important people in the school were the teachers who dealt with the students every day. And Chad's job was to make our jobs as teachers easier. If I have a problem today and I want to ask somebody some advice, I don't call principal number one. I'll call Chad. I will call him and say, hey, man, I'm having this problem. Can you help me understand this? I can still, to this day, I can call Chad up and he would answer the phone and we would have a lovely conversation. Because he understood that his job was not to be my master, but to be a servant to me to make my job easier. When he got let go, I was really upset. I actually didn't stay at IPS very long after he was let go either, because I was so upset. And this is what Jesus gives us an example in John chapter 13. Before the Passover celebration, Jesus knew that his hour had come to leave this world and return to his Father. He had loved his disciples during his ministry on earth, and now he loved them to the very end. It was time for supper, and the devil had already prompted Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had given him authority over everything, and that he had come from God and would return to God. So he got up from the table, took his robe, wrapped a towel around his waist, and poured water into a basin. Then he began to wash the disciples' feet, drying them with a towel he had wrapped around him. I don't know if you've ever had the honor of washing someone's feet, but it's a very humbling experience. It's a very humbling experience to get on your hands and knees in front of someone, to take their shoes and socks off, to put their feet into water, and to thoroughly wash their feet and then to dry them. It is a very humbling experience. It is the job of a servant or a slave to do this. Now again, Jesus, he knows that in just a couple of days, he's going to die on the cross for these men. He's going to die for these men. Would anyone have a problem with Jesus sitting down at his last real meal on earth saying, I'm literally about to die for you in the most painful way possible. Would you please take care of me at this meal? Would anyone have a problem with that? No, we would all jump up and say, Jesus, how can I serve you? But what does Jesus say? Jesus says, listen, I'm getting ready to die for you, and I'm going to show you how I'm going to die for you right now, because I'm going to get down on my hands and knees, and I'm going to serve you by washing your feet. That is our job. We are supposed to be washing people's feet. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, but Matt, you don't know the people I have to live with. You don't know the people I have to work with. You don't know the people I interact with on a daily basis. What example did Jesus give us here? Jesus already knew that Judas was going to betray him. He already knew. In about 5 minutes, he's getting ready to tell everybody else, hey, Judas is getting ready to betray me. But does he wash everybody's feet and gets to Judas and says, Judas, you're about to betray me. Get up, I'm not washing your feet. That's not what he does. He washes Judas's feet, knowing full well that he's going to die directly because of Judas's actions. I told you I didn't like that principle, but it was my job to wash his feet. I did my best at it. I didn't do the best all the time, but I tried. But that's our job. And this, after going on in verse 12, it says, after washing their feet, he put on his robe again and sat down and asked, do you understand what I was doing? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right because that's what I am. And since I am your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet. I have given you an example to follow. Do as I have done, and I tell you the truth. Slaves are not greater than their master, nor is the messenger more important than the one who sends the message. Now that you know these things, God will bless you for doing them. See, our job is to wash each other's feet. Our job is to go out and to wash each other's feet, to serve each other, to humble ourselves to other people in order to build them up. Now, I'm not saying that as you walk out, there's going to be a row of basins out front, out there, so that you can wash people's feet as you leave. That's not what we're going to do today. But I want you to understand how you can do this as Christians today. The first thing we need to do is we need to look for those in need. I guarantee you, if you wake up in the morning and you say, God, I love you, I want to serve you, please show me people around me who are in need, God will show you people around you who are in need. You're going to wake up and you're going to notice that single mother that lives near you who is at her wit's end doing everything she possibly can to raise her family. You're going to notice those things. But to wash someone's feet, you can't just notice that they're dirty. You actually have to find ways to help. So you see that single mother who's just struggling and you come over and say, hey, I wanted to make a meal for you and your family. So here, you don't have to worry about supper tonight. Here's a meal. Hey, I know that you have been going crazy trying to work two jobs and take care of all these kids. Can I come in and help you clean your house? Hey, you haven't had a nap in 18 years. Can I come in and watch your kids just simply so you can take a nap? Find ways to pay their bills. You know, they're working their heart out. Find a way to help them out. It is our job to find people in need and to find ways to help them. Now, this is graduation Sunday, so I need to talk to the graduates for a little bit. So graduates that are sitting in here, guess what? You have been poured into for years. For years, you have had teachers and principals, professors, parents, coaches, youth workers, ministers, people that you know, neighbors. You have had people pouring into you for years, and that is awesome. I love the way that we work, pouring into people and helping them. Guess what? You've been filled for 18, 19, 22 years. It's time to start filling those around you. It is time to take what's been done to you and to start doing that for other people. It is your job to go out and wash people's feet. Now, some of you graduates are getting ready to go into the workforce. You're getting ready to go work some jobs. You are going to have, I guarantee this, you are going to have bosses and coworkers you do not like. I can guarantee it. I, of course, love all of my coworkers right now. Seriously, this is some of the best people I've ever had the opportunity to work with. There's no one I work with right now. Maybe Dan. That I have some trouble with from time to time. But I love the people I work with. But there are times where you are going to have people you just can't stand to work with. And guess what your job is? Your job is to wash their feet. Your job is to find ways to serve them and be Jesus to them. Some of you are getting ready to go to college and you're gonna have this experience of having this thing that you have never had before in your life. It's called a roommate. You are gonna be forced to live for 9 months out of the year with a person you have never met before in your life, and they will do things that drive you crazy. My freshman year, I had a roommate who, I hate alarm clocks. I absolutely hate the sound of alarm clocks. So the alarm clock is on my side of the room so that I can be the one that shuts it off very quickly because I just hate the sound of them. And had a roommate who would sleep through his alarm and set snooze alarms. So it would go off like 3 or 4 times. I did not wash his feet. I smacked him in the face with a pillow. I would throw things at him. Like, I don't have an 8 o'clock class. Would you shut that thing off so I can go to sleep? I didn't wash his feet. It was my job to wash his feet, and I failed miserably at that. You are going to have roommates that are going to just irk you sometimes, that you're just not going to mesh. And guess what? It's not their job to serve you. It is your job to serve them. You are always going to have people you don't like. It is your job to wash their feet. It is your job to serve them. I grew up in the 80s, and I grew up in the house of very conservative Republicans. So it went God, Jesus, Reagan. Kennedy was way down at the bottom. Like, we didn't talk about him, but maybe every November when we would have the, you know, the remembrance of his assassination, we didn't really talk about Kennedy all that much. But as doing some studying and reading, there's something that Kennedy said that I think is really impactful and really powerful to us right now, and that is, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Ask not what your church can do for you. ask what you can do for your church. Ask not what your roommate can do for you. Ask what you can do for your roommate. Now, graduates, don't forget your candles, but I want all the graduates to come on up and come on up front here. So all you graduates, stand up and come up here. Now, as the graduates come up every year, the graduates come up and they get these gifts. And I know you always think and you want to know, you wonder what's in their grad gifts. So this year, I'm going to share with you what's in the grad gifts before they get them. In every grad gift, and I think I have the right number, but I've literally in the past 2 days had two people added. So if I don't have enough, what? Just stand anywhere. Seth will get mad at me and, oh, well, Seth is awesome, by the way. The amount of things that he can do. So your grad gifts this year have, of course, and if we don't have enough, Liz, since you live in my house, I'll take care of you, I swear. Everybody gets candy, because why not? We need candy. The candy is different in every one, so if you don't like your candy, maybe wash each other's feet and have a little barter system going on out there afterwards. I don't know. Usually I give food gift cards, but gas is really expensive right now, so everybody's getting a gas gift card this year instead of food. And there's people out there like, why didn't I graduate? I could have got one too. Everybody's going to get one of these stickers. The sticker has a bear holding a pineapple. And the bear holding the pineapple says, bear fruit. Because you need to remember that as Christ followers, it is your job to bear fruit to all of those around you. And the last thing that you're going to find in your gifts is a towel. This towel is a constant reminder to you that it is your job to be washing the feet of those around you. It is your job to wash everyone's feet. Now, we're going to have an object lesson here in service. So everybody has their candles. Now's the time to get your candles out. Get them out. Get your candle out. Now, I'm going to light my candle. It's a brand new candle, so it's going to take a second. All right, there we go. So I'm going to light my candle. What I'm going to do is I'm going to serve. Well, wait, I can't. Forgot. We got the PowerPoint with all the seniors on there. My bad. So here are 2021 graduates. Devin Arthur graduated from Arizona State University with a master's degree in health informatics. He is pursuing his career as a data analyst for Enclara, and that's supposed to say Pharmaca, but I misspelled it. So Devin graduated with his master's degree. Elijah, who was with us first service, graduated from the University of Southern Indiana with a Bachelor of Science in Anthropology, and he's pursuing an internship with AmeriCorps. Austin Cody is a high school graduate, and he will be attending Purdue Polytechnic Columbus and majoring in mechanical and engineering technology. That's a mouthful. Elizabeth Davis, I'm not old enough to have a senior, but Elizabeth has graduated from Edgewood High School, and she's going to be attending Ball State University, not with the dog stays with me, and majoring in French. Stevie Farley is a graduate of Edgewood High School, and she's going to be attending Grace College, and she has very wisely not decided a major as of yet. Emma Johnson, Emma's over there. Emma graduated Indiana University, a four-year degree she did in 3 years. Took me seven. She graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Human Development and Family Studies, and she will be attending the Accelerated Nursing Program through IU School of Nursing. Seth is a graduate of Edgewood High School, and he will be entering the workforce. Jenny Miller has graduated from Indiana University with a Bachelor of Science in Psychology, pursuing her career at Centerstone in Bloomington as a behavioral health technician. Tate, who I don't believe Tate is with us today, but he's a graduate of Indiana University and with a BA in Criminal Justice and is pursuing a post-baccalaureate certificate in paralegal studies. Kalen right here, graduated Ball State University with a BA in Communications, pursuing his career at Bloomington Housing Authority. Brady Tucker graduated from Indiana University Med School and is continuing his education in the ENT residency program at the University of Kentucky. And Amber Vikrumba has graduated from Milligan University with a Bachelor of Science in Nursing and pursuing her career at Tennessee, is it Niswonger? Niswonger. Okay, Niswonger Children's Hospital. So these are our 2021 graduates. Please give them a hand.